Well, greetings, everyone. It's Michael Creasy here, that interview guy. And with me, I have a real treat because he's a fellow Canuck. He is the Twitter king here in Canada, an expert when it comes to social networking and social marketing by the name of Scott Scratton. Scott, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. Great to be on the line with a fellow Canadian as well.
Well, it's cool. You know, it seems like us Canucks are rocking it. You know, A, we have a kick-ass hockey team. Not that I'm trying to rub it in. B, we have a kick-ass Olympic hockey team. Not that I'm trying to rub it in. Well, is there a repeat here happening, Scott? I'm not sure.
It's funny. I was in Milwaukee for a Milwaukee Brewers game. One of the guys that runs the entire parking operations is Canadian, and he walks around with his Vancouver Olympic jacket and calls all of his American friends silver, and I quite enjoyed that. So it was all in good fun, but we take our hockey pretty seriously.
Scott, tell us a little bit about yourself, because first of all, I stumbled across your site probably about 6 months ago, and I'm in awe of what you're doing, because, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you are a relative nobody, and then boom, suddenly you're on the social media scene. And you've been able to grow your business. You're recognized as like the number one tweeted guy or on Twitter. So I think that's pretty cool.
Well, I've been running the company, kind of our un-agency, I guess you'd call it, for unmarketing for about 7-8 years now. And everything was behind the scenes. So we're like a typical agency where we did the work, and the client, you know, obviously got the results. So we, back in the day, we really made a lot of these viral videos online, these motivational videos. So if you ever see the flash movies online with the, it's like a glorified slideshow with pictures and text floating across and really cheesy music, we're the ones that made those, pretty much. We've probably made 95% of the ones out there. We've made 70 of them over 7 years, and I'm sorry to the world for them. They're really cheesy, and they work. You know, they build lists great, but I was tired of being behind the scenes. I'm more of a frontman guy, and about, let's say, April 08 to probably the start of January 09, I wanted to start dabbling and seeing what I could do more in social media, because it really fit well with unmarketing, because unmarketing is all about stop marketing and start engaging. It's about community and relationships, and I had found that social media was a perfect potential chance for me to jump on that platform, and then I realized I'm going to devote most of my time to trying to see what I could get out of it for what other people could get out of it with me, and it really, really took off. But it only took off when I started giving it the time, where I think people mistake this, especially people in the real estate field, mistake this for a new way to push your old ads, and it's not. Social media isn't a new way to put out crappy marketing. It's a way to build relationships. So when people have a need for an agent, have a need for a lender, have a need for anybody in that area or that vertical, the logical choice should be you if I have a relationship with you. So what are you doing to build the relationship with those people?
So part of this, when I look at it sort of like from 60,000 feet, and I think you hit it right on, a lot of realtors will put their listings out there and it's all about me. Like you said, it's all about marketing propaganda.
Right.
And the understanding that I have is social networking gives me the opportunity as an individual to reach out and touch more people. No different than what we were doing in the old days when we pick up the phone and get toe-to-toe and belly-to-belly with somebody. So the thing is, we're reaching more people, but we've got to really be cognizant of what we're reaching them with and how we're communicating with them.
And there's a different style of communication. I really it works so well with the fundamentals of when I created unmarketing, again, like 7 years ago. I came up with this old marketing is push and pray. You know, where you push out a message and you pray somebody buys from it. And social media is this pull and stay. You pull people in front of you and you stay in front of them. And so you're reaching a lot of people. You're probably reaching exponentially more people out there. But how you reach them and how you communicate is different. It's no longer dictation. It's conversation. And that's, again, especially in real estate field, you're so used to flyer drops and getting your listing out there, when it, more importantly, it's seeing what your market wants and the ability of the people who are not raising their hand actively saying, I'm looking to sell or buy a property, where you can just be their expert in their field. But first, it's really almost becoming their friend in a non-cheesy way. People do business with people they know, like, and trust. And the more expensive and the more emotional the purchase or the sale is, the more those silos have to be stronger. So you real estate, you're in one of those top tiers. You need that highest level of trust. It isn't about whose sign is or face is on a bus stop. pages you can put in the paper. It's about how many people trust you, know you, and like you.
The joke that I remember the best is, a little kid at school, first day at school, and his buddy comes running up to him and says, "Sorry to hear that your daddy's missing." He says, "What are you talking about?" "Well, my mommy and I were at the grocery store yesterday, and we saw his face on the shopping cart."
That's it. It's amazing for me that, especially in that field, and it goes with a couple of fields where they think, well, they read somewhere in a marketing book somewhere that, familiarity, builds relationships, and they think familiarity is how often do I see your face. And that works really well for people who are selling the advertising to put your face on. But it's not true. It's like I'm sure you've heard the line, somebody has to read something 7, 8, or 9 times before it becomes, really in their brain. I think that line was made by people who sell newspaper ads because they wanted you to buy the ad 7, 8, or 9 times. It's social media is like the ultimate networking event, which I know most agents know that part and are good at real live networking. They're always agents at Chamber of Commerce meetings and any kind of group get together, but most of them fail when it comes to virtual networking, and that shouldn't be the case because it's really the same thing.
Well, how do you make that transition then? I'm assuming then we're starting off, let's focus on one of the most popular sites, and that would be Facebook, I'm taking it. Mm-hmm. And you're introducing yourself to the world. How much is too much? How much is too intimate, too personal? How do you cross the line then from segueing to, okay, it's all about, not about me, I'm sharing me with you. But then how do you make that subtle transition to here's what I do?
Well, that's the thing. For something like Facebook or it doesn't matter, any other sites as well, you can choose how personal you get. Like, for example, for myself, I talk about my son and I talk about what I'm doing and I'm very open in what I do. And I don't know if there's too much of a line that there should be a point where you say, okay, don't talk about that anymore. But what you do have to realize is everything you say and do can and will be held against you in the court of social media. So everything you say, you have to be willing to be put up on a billboard beside the highway with your face, your name, your company logo, and your phone number with your number one client and your mom driving by. So there isn't, I don't think, a line where you can put it, but you have to realize that it's all open. Facebook and Twitter especially are both two very reactive mediums where we can talk and we can jump and we can reply on things, where we can like or mention something on somebody's comment. It's very gut reaction, but it stays there. So especially if you go off on something, like my only golden rule in social media, for Twitter, I'm an open book in social media. The two things I don't talk about is religion and politics. Now, I'm agnostic in both. Neither matters to me very much, but you never really win when you start discussing those things in an open forum, and it can make you look bad. Like I had a month ago, I had somebody, I was just reading some tweets and some Facebook updates, and somebody just took a real hard shot at gay marriage. Now, everybody has a right to their own opinion of what it is, but her opinion was something that really took me back. I'm like, wow, I didn't think that's what you stood for, that's what you're like. And it really changed my opinion and my potential future business dealings with this person. So although it's personal, everything is business and everything is your brand, regardless of whether or not you want it to be.
Yeah, that religion seems like that's a touchy line any
right.
given day of the week. I've got friends. Well, actually, I know I'm burning in hell, according to a few of my friends. So I've got that waiting for me, as as they used to say in Caddyshack. I got that going for me. When we talk about this personal aspect of you sharing personally who you are, I would have to think that there's a consistency of what you do, how you do it, but more importantly, there's got to be a sincerity here.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad you brought that up, where a lot of times we don't talk about this in marketing because we think it's kind of frou-frou or fluffy, but an overused term, yes, but it's still true, is authenticity and transparency, where it's so important, and I think this is where I've succeeded fairly well, is the consistency of your voice on Twitter, on Facebook, on the phone, in person, or on the stage should be almost constant, even across the whole thing. So if I walk up to you and we start talking, it's the same reaction, the same vibe you get as talking to me on Twitter. I think that voice and that clarity of voice is very important, because what happens if you meet in person and I know you as a guy who's extroverted and supportive and funny, and then we meet in person and you're standoffish and kind of a jackass, it really can jar that potential relationship and almost make you feel betrayed. So you've got to watch what you're doing, and you've got to realize that, again, everybody's watching, and how you handle yourself when it comes to transparency and authenticity is really one of those things that will always come back to either bite you or help you, depending on. That's what I think I've worked on myself.
And that's kind of the real power behind all this is, and you know this firsthand because you're speaking, you're out there, you know, you're basically this prophet when it comes to social networking and social marketing, that people approach you like they've known you forever. You know, you've become like their trusted friend. They know, love, and trust you, even though they've never met you.
Right, and that's the key. And when you say, you know, when I go to an event, now it's really changed events and conferences for me. And, you know, even I'm the most extroverted guy I know, and I can go and talk to anybody. I still don't like walking into conferences and not knowing somebody. And when I go to those things now with Twitter, I will have, I'm not making this up, I'll have, depending on the event, 50 to 100 people approach me over the entire conference to say, hey, how are you? I follow you on Twitter. We talked before. How's it going? You've broken the ice before you even get there. And when you see somebody who you've talked to on Twitter for months and you see them in person, you feel like you know them because you do. Just because it's virtual doesn't mean you can't connect. So when I go out there and see people, like in the fall, I'm going to 30 cities on the book tour. And they are every place I'm going to go, I'm going to know 40, 50, 60, 70 people at each event. And that's all virtually through Twitter. So you build real relationships even though they're virtual.
Now, you dropped the bomb here, your book tour, so I'll give you an opportunity here to shamelessly promote this thing, just because you're a fellow Canuck. What's the book all about?
Well, the book is the same as the brand. It's Unmarketing, Stop Marketing, Start Engaging. And really, it's that rant about relationships, but what I find really cool, and I think what people would actually like, instead of me babbling on about why I love my own book, is the book tour itself, because it's called the Unbook Tour, and it was all planned through Twitter. I didn't pick any of the cities. They picked me. And it's an incredible, cool way of using social media, where I went out there and sent out a tweet and says, who wants me to come to their city on this book tour? Go to my webpage, and here's my requirements. And I had two requirements. One was they pre-ordered at least 100 books, found a sponsor for a flight and hotel, and two, no bookstores. I didn't want to sit at a bookstore table by myself and look pitiful and have people may or may not buy a pity purchase of my book. So 30 cities have raised their hand for me to come there and met all the requirements to do that, where most authors go out there and they're out of pocket. They're going to go and on spec. Maybe they'll sell a couple books. I know how much I make per book, and it's not enough for me to fly somewhere and sell three of them. So this is all planned through Twitter, all planned through relationships. Every person in each city that raised their hand I knew through Twitter and I've built relationships with. It's like a walking case study for engagement. It's the coolest thing in the world to me.
You know, it's so sad. I've seen some of these book tours, and you know, the poor vagrant, the homeless guy on the corner with his coffee cup is probably hauling in more cash than the guy trying to sell
the
book.
More than the author.
You know, that's a sad reality. But you know, here's a perfect testimony to what you were saying. You've got this following of people who know, like, and trust you, and they're pulling you into the stream saying, hey, come to our town. We've already bought the book. We want to find out more about what it is that you do, even though we know you.
Right. And that's the key is, because for me, you know, I'm marketing is still marketing. I want to get that clear to people. It's not like I'm not marketing. I'm not martyr marketing. I run a business. I have to make money. But the whole point of building relationships is not the old school either look. It's like the real estate, right? Here's my listing, either buy or goodbye. It's one of those two buys. For me, it's I'm going to stand in front of people, and the ones who want to take another step in this kind of business relationship with me, they're welcome to do it. And if they don't want to, they can still stay and we can still hang out. So it's amazing that you can have this community and not have to make it how much is everybody worth to me. And that's a huge part of the negative or the critics to social media is they say, what's the ROI? And I never ever want to know the ROI of an individual relationship with somebody. It freaks me out. That makes me feel skeezy. If I can walk into a room and say, you're worth $20, you're worth $4,000, you're worth minus $4 for some reason, I don't want to do that. You know, I really believe that business is built on relationships, so I want to make building them my business.
Yeah, I would say I agree and I disagree with that, because the fact that we are in business means that we've got limited amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to make sure that I'm investing my time in something, and you know, ROI sounds so bottom line cutthroat, but in a sense it is. If I'm spending 2 hours playing Mafia Wars and farm games versus knocking on doors, making phone calls.
Right, and it's about, and again, we're not going to all sit around Twitter and hold hands and sing we are the world and everything's going to be fine. If it wasn't good for my business I wouldn't be doing it. I live on Twitter. Since January 1st, 09, I live almost every waking hour in that world, in that network. And if it wasn't good for business, I wouldn't be there for one day. So I don't want to make kind of, you know, put the frou-frou over people's eyes. There's great people. I've never met more solid, smart people in business. But I did not go on there to start selling consulting or get speaking gigs. I got on there to meet other business owners, because when you run your own business, it's very isolating. You don't have a water cooler. I can't turn to my assistant and say, I have no idea what I'm doing, even though she knows that. But this is my network, and I believe that the more the word got out about me and what I did, the more obvious choice I became. So it wasn't individual ROIs. I've made more because of Twitter than I have in any other endeavor I've ever done. But my profit, my return on my investment, because the investment in social media as well isn't, like you're kind of leaning towards, isn't necessarily monetary. Your investment is time, and we all have limited amounts of that time. But my return has been profitable financially, intellectually, emotionally, and socially. So all the silos filled up for me. But that's because I didn't judge people and say, I'm not talking to you. You're not in a direct position that's going to help me. You don't do that. It's fairly scalable. It doesn't take you long to talk to people. And you never know who knows somebody else.
Have you ever crossed paths with Jeff Turner?
I don't think so.
The name ring a bell. He's a social networking guru in the States, and he's a technology guy as well. So his passion is technology, and he uses Twitter and social networking to get the word out there. Very opinionated, and basically you love him or you hate him. And the question I posed to him was, well, if I haven't gotten into this arena yet, social networking, and I use that broadly because I'm including, you know, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all the different, so I'm lumping them all together under that one umbrella. If I haven't started it yet, am I hurting myself by not being there?
You know, I don't think it's the... I've actually changed my tune on this, and I really believe that if you just want to be there for the sake of being there, if you want to try to... If your first question to yourself is, how do I automate this stuff, or how do I be in 10 places at once without having to be there, it's better you're not there. I'd rather you not have a presence than try to have presence without being present. You know, it's like with tools and automation, and it's bad to have a Twitter account and not be there with it, because people see it and they think that's where you can go and talk to you, and then you're ignoring it. Same as a Facebook page. I've seen Facebook pages from billion-dollar brands, and all they do is dictate, and people comment and comment and comment on these statuses, and nobody's answering them back. It looks ridiculous. And because nowadays we've changed, we've moved to publicized customer service. We're in public customer service mode now. We've never been in this, other than, you know, small message boards that used to exist. We've never been in this realm of customer service where it's public. And if you don't answer or you don't acknowledge somebody, everybody can see that. That's totally different than back in the day. If I phoned you or sent an email and I heard nothing back, nobody would know you're ignoring me. Well, now you're being held accountable. Everything's immediate and everybody's relevant. And you need to be on top of that. You know, if you're an agent and somebody says something about one of your properties, or they drove past it, or they saw your sign, or they're making fun of your picture, whatever, if you're not there and not listening, you know, I'd rather not have an account there at all. But if you're going to do it, the biggest mistake I see people, not just in real estate, but most fields, is they try to be everywhere right away. They try to build their Facebook page, their Twitter page, a YouTube clip of walking through some houses, and a blog and everything else. You need to platform. I call it platforming. And you just need to pick a spot and grow it first. And that's what I did with Twitter. When I got onto Twitter, I didn't have a blog yet. I didn't have a Facebook page. They didn't really have the fan pages. You know, they had group pages back then. But I said I wanted to build a presence quickly. So I chose Twitter because it was a path to least resistance. It was the quickest way to build relationships. And January 1st, 09, I said, I'm going to live on Twitter, only use Twitter, not Facebook, not anything else. And when I started that, I'd already had about 1,200 followers over the previous 8 months, and I lived on Twitter for 30 days. I tweeted, get this, I tweeted 7,000 times in January. And I went from 1,200 followers to 10,000 in that 30 days. That's how I started my momentum. That's how I built my platform. So when somebody says, wow, all of a sudden you just become successful, I'm like, well, no, I kind of lived there. I worked for it. The more I gave to Twitter, the more I gave to the network, the more I got back. And I didn't pitch a thing. Not a thing until I had tweeted 10,000 times. Now, that's a bit excessive. That's a bit extreme. But when I looked at my number of tweets, when I hit 50,000, I've tweeted over 50,000 times now. When I analyze them, and you can do this yourself, if you go to tweetstats.com, I analyze them, 75% of my tweets were replies to people. So 38,000 of those 50,000 were replies. Those are points of conversation. That was a huge part that I realized, wow, where else, how else could you do and have almost 40,000 conversation points with people all over the place than this area? And I thought it was the coolest thing.
50,000. So do your thumbs drag when you walk?
You know, I actually have carpal tunnel in my left wrist. I think it's the actual, I'm not making it up, I think I had the first real Twitter injury from tweeting so much. I have an injury of a 60-year-old data entry typist.
Well, let's rewind this then, old man. I'll go easy on you then. Starting out, because I've looked at this, you know, so I've got my own, I don't want to say selfish motives here, but I'm trying to get my head around this too. I consider myself a fairly savvy guy, and you know, I'm turning 50, so I don't think I'm a dinosaur yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I shoot video, I do all that kind of stuff. But when I look at this, I started off on Twitter, and I thought, who gives a damn about the fact that I had ran in my cereal today, that I went running, whatever that is. So I thought, okay, maybe I don't want to go there. So I started on Facebook. Begrudgingly, I started on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I've been putting out snippets of here's what I've been doing and sharing content, because that's my big thing. I'm a content guy with videos and audios and sharing.
Right.
Is that the right approach? Do you pick the format? And when I say format, do you pick Twitter, Facebook, whatever the myriad is there? Pick one, master it, move on. Do you try doing a few? What's Scott's secret to success on this?
Well, for me, it was that platform side of things, where once I grew Twitter to 20,000 followers, I then launched the blog. And my first post, so although my blog was, you know, 9 years late to the blog party, my first post had 10,000 readers. So I had instant audience because I built a platform, and I didn't ask them for anything, really. And I had, you know, I average 100 comments every post because of right out of the gate, because I built that platform. And then I opened the Facebook group. But my Facebook page, my fan page or group page or whatever they're calling it this morning, just went over 1,000 quote fans or likes or whatever, you know, however it works now. So I'm just growing that now. So now my plan is to, once I've now kind of got myself, you know, positioned on Twitter, the blog's doing well, now I'm working on Facebook. So my job on Facebook now is to feed it and drip it and engage on it as much as I can to now grow that platform. And I'll be doing that on the book tour. I'm going to do a daily video blog only on the Facebook group. So that's going to build that, and I'm giving tips the entire time, so that's going to build that audience. But it has to be, to me, one at a time. We all have a limited amount of time, and we can't just do it, you know, every day, every platform. And to your point of saying, you know, why does anybody care, you know, what I had for breakfast, what I had for lunch? Well, if I know you, I possibly care. We bond on those little things. We don't bond on epic things all the time. It's not always about what the mortgage rates are this year. It's not always about, you know, the economy. Sometimes it is about what you just had for breakfast. Sometimes it is that I just heard a song on the radio yesterday from the Beastie Boys, and I tweet out about it, and 27 people write back and go, oh, thanks for the reminder of the song. We bond on non-business things, on non-sales things. It's called relationships, and that's how we get to. I got more traction and relationships with people and more replies when I talked about, I tried to carry 12 grocery bags up from the car so I didn't have to make a second trip, and I wrote, what's your record? I had like 190 replies to that.
Is there an evil dark side to this, Scott? Because when you talk about all these relationships and you've touched 50,000 people, potentially you could piss off 50,000 people.
You know, when you invite the world to come, they come, and you can't control that. And I've had my fair share of dealing with whether we call them trolls, whether we call them psychos, or whether we call them fascinating people.
Ex-girlfriends?
Bingo. I literally probably deal with them almost every day. Because of my style is very polarizing, and when I talk about it, I take very strong stands on things in business as well. And I go against a lot of dudes who think differently. Like I've had everything from, I had somebody tweet out a month ago, 2 months ago, just generally, you know, somebody should give me a medal. I just watched 10 minutes of marketing speak on a video and didn't shoot myself in the head. And I know this guy. Thanks, Dad. You know, I know this guy. I met him. He lives in the city next to me. And he comes out and does something like that. I wrote back and I said, why the hate? And he said to me, it's not hate, it's criticism. You should learn to take it. And I'm like, no. there's a difference here. There's a huge difference here. I was just in New York City for 2 weeks in a couple conferences, and I had a guy threaten to come down and want to fight me in front of the hotel, like it's West Side Story or something. Like we're going to snap and start singing the Jets song, and he wanted to fight me because I made a joke. And he was insulting me, and I turned back and with sarcasm, he said he's going to drive down from North Carolina and fight. I'm like, really? Like, are we at that stage now? So it's scary sometimes, and you can't control it, but you also have to realize a lot of people who throw hate at you sometimes, it's pointed at themselves. You know, they have an issue with themselves, probably living in their mom's basement, and just sitting there cackling to themselves, and you realize that, just ignore them. Really don't, that's the old line, back in the geek days of the internet, don't feed the trolls. Those are the ones who are trying to poke you, to try to say, hey, you know, listen to me, react to me, don't react to them.
I guess Red Bull and chocolate bars will do that when you're living in a basement, butter. You know, that's kind of the thing. But at what point, so I'm looking at this from two different perspectives. You know, being a martial arts guy, I don't pick fights, and I try to avoid them at all costs. If I take right. that onto social networking, if I've got some pinhead that's throwing stuff at me, at what point did you just ignore it, or you know, you try to rise above it? Because in my mind here, I think if I invite the guy in by saying something back to him, then suddenly I'm introducing all my followers to this pinhead that may only have four people that are all in the basement with him.
Exactly, and that's very, very important. It's to realize that if they say something to you on let's look at the individual platforms. If they say something to you on Twitter, nobody sees it unless they're following both of you. And this person usually has 11 followers. They're all themselves, made up of like fake accounts. And if I reply back to that guy, then my whole world can see it. And I didn't build up this entire platform just to get some jackass exposure because they want followers. And some people will do that. They want to poke at you so they can get noticed and get known. And that's what you have to remember. Now, Facebook's a little different because if they say something on your wall, or let's not your wall because you can kind of choose who your friends are going to be, so it's a little harder to get in there. But if you have like a group page, let's say your brokerage, your realty firm has a group page, and somebody comes and takes a shot at you, you have to first determine is it real criticism or is it somebody being an asshole? And there's difference. And I censor it. I'll remove it if I don't think it's appropriate or it's personal. And people say, well, that's censorship. And I'm like, it is. You know, there's no freedom of speech on my Facebook page. Let's read the rules. Read the Constitution. Read anything you want. It doesn't give you the right to be a jackass on my page.
Well, let's come back here for a second, Mussolini. How do you monitor your reputation?
It depends on what way you want to do it, but it's also very important that you want to have it. I pretty much use the basic. I set up Google Alerts. So you just go to Google News and click on Alerts, and I put in quotes, I put my name, my book name, and like one of my key phrases that anytime it'll come up, I get a daily digest of where it's been said or done. And that's one of the ways I monitor it. The other way I monitor it is having like a search string on Twitter with my name and the book name on it too, so I can see it. And monitoring your brand, especially if your brand's bigger than you sometimes, is important because a lot of times people, again, especially on Twitter, they won't directly say something to your Twitter account. They'll mention the name of an agent or of the company name, but they won't direct it towards you. So you have to be aware that people are talking because people like to vent. Twitter is a great vent for a lot of people. It's on their iPhone, it's on their BlackBerry, it's on their Android, and they're just going to say, oh, this person was a jackass, we'll send it out, or this open house was just terrible, and this agent is ridiculous. And you want to be able to see that coming out there and happening. Because to me, I call it the 98% of the middle. So the 1% of people who really, really hate anything you do will always tell you, and the 1% of people on the other side who love you, who we can call stalkers sometimes, you can't do no wrong to, but there's a middle of 98% who will never directly say anything to you. They're lurkers, the people who watch, but they'll vent, but not at you. I think people are passive by nature, and they're not going to come at you with even a very minor complaint. But you can see it and you can monitor it by just setting up a couple of little search strings.
That's the interesting. I wrote an article for my Real Estate Unplugged followers, I think it was last month's edition or 2 months ago. And I said, don't get caught up with the numbers of people that say they are your friends. You know, so when you look at Facebook and you've got, you know, 2,000, 3,000, whatever that number is, friends, in Michael's world, a friend is, if I'm in a Mexican prison somewhere and I've got one quarter, if I make that call, your gnarly ass is going to be there with horses hitched, ready to break me out.
Or in there with you. You know,
yeah, well, chances are they got me in there in the first place, but you know, good point. So don't get enamored by the fact that these people are your friends. But the one thing I kind of saw interesting, there was a business acquaintance of mine that got into one of these pissing wars. And it all started with them having testimonials on their site. And the testimonials kind of trashed the competition. But they're testimonials. So you really can't, you know, say, well, you know, say only nice things about me, but, you know, nice things about my competition. It is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other party got their nose out of joint. Boom! Started this firefight. Like, literally, it was a firefight. And you could just see torpedoes firing over the bow.
Yep.
The thing that I saw was really interesting is the crowds were polarized, and they were rallying around who they thought was right and who they thought was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like two villages coming together. Or better still, it's like watching a European soccer game, you know, Glasgow versus whoever. And they're getting rowdy in the stands.
Yeah.
And that seems to me, that's pretty scary.
Well, and you get it's a mob mentality. And the problem is, like, you can sway or tick off an audience by just clicking like on a certain status or comment because you're supporting it. And it's amazing that we all, I believe that everybody has the right to their opinion, but most people get to the point where they say, you have your right to your opinion as long as it's mine. And you get into you know what, to be honest, just between you and me and everybody who's listening, I really believe that I think 60, 70, 80% of the people of the world are morons. Like, they just don't have any tact, they don't have any street sense, they don't have the ability to just have common sense. It ain't so common. And you have to watch for it, because that becomes permanent, unless you delete it, but really, it becomes permanent. Google always remembers it. Whatever you say and do will be held against you, and you have to, it's your brand. Marketing isn't a task, it isn't your flyer, it isn't a direct mail drop. It's every single time you have a point of engagement with people, it's marketing. So when you get into a pissing match with somebody on your wall, on Facebook, you're branding. And we have to remember that. You are a representation. If you're a solopreneur or you're a member of a giant national real estate brand, you are branding and you are marketing every time you say. So when you tell somebody to go to hell, the company is telling that person to go to hell. So you've got to watch it.
I've got this thing on my bulletin board. It says, better to be perceived a fool than open your mouth and eliminate any doubt.
It's so true.
You know, and that's what this comes down to. But you've opened up an interesting door here. When you talk about the brand, the reality is, since you're now engaged, and in essence, you're a public figure now. You know, you could be a rock star depending on your following. Mm-hmm. You are the brand now.
Yep. The people are the brand. And it's such a huge point about that, because everything is people. People always were to me, but we were behind so many walls. Like the press release would go through seven people and edit it before it's approved, and now somebody can react with their iPhone on their hip. That we realize companies aren't walls. They're not logos. They're people. And they change when people change. And we can try to guard it all they want, and corporations can try to control the message when they never actually have. So it's kind of scary. And the bigger the company, the bigger your brand gets messed up by people talking. And you have to decide on that level, you know, how much will I tell my people who work for me or are franchised out from my brand, what are my rules? And it's actually not very smart to tell them that they can't say stuff or can't do stuff. It's more of advice and guidelines. And it gets into a sticky situation of how much do you want to control the brand from back in the day to what today is, where, you know, one tweet, one Facebook status can derail something really quickly.
Well, see, that's the whole thing. It seems like the social networking, and for me, it's been the advent of blogs. As soon as blogs came out and cheap computers and cheap video cameras, in essence, you become your own TV studio.
Right.
And we can so easily now turn the tide that we don't have to, you know, voice a complaint through a hotline. We are our own hotline.
Right.
And one of the things that really stands out, was it American Airlines, that guy that had his guitar trashed?
Yeah.
And, you know, suddenly, you know, they're ignoring him. They don't care less. He does this little song, puts it out on YouTube, what, over a million views or something like that?
Yeah, huge amount. It's huge. Again, it's back to everything is relevant and everything is immediate.
And
every voice that says something is possible.
And that's the really important thing. I remember one of the tweets you did, or was a post that you did, you were talking about, and this is more of a Canadian thing, Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
And it would be the equivalent of, I don't want to say Krispy Kreme, but maybe
Dunkin' Donuts.
Donuts. There you go. And you get hooked on the coffee. And part of it is they put cocaine in it. That's my theory. Why? It's got nothing to do with the 19% cream and double sugar. It's cocaine in the coffee. It's cut through the shit. It's cocaine. And you were going through the drive-thru. And when you refer something, I find that there are two components. There's the experience, how it made you feel, and then there's the actual product.
Right.
And in your case, you went for the product, and it was the experience. And if those two don't line up, you're going to let the world know that, you know, this isn't the kind of place I'm going to recommend.
Well, not yet. And when I realized that we've always had choice. I think as consumers, we've always had choice. But when you then vent or say something and you don't like it, like I pull out of the drive-thru and then stir my coffee, and I tweet about that saying the worst thing that happens in the morning is when you get a mile down the road and they haven't stirred your coffee. I know, a white-collar problem, I know, but when you say that and then 25 people come back and say, oh, that happens to me too, I hate it, or this place actually always stirs it, you realize that you got power and a group behind your venting, and it is both the product and experience, and we're allowed to say it now, and it gets really, really loud. And companies can't hide behind the fact that they're not service-based, and that was a small thing. I changed my coffee religion over 20 years deep because of the little things. It was always the little things, but those mean a lot, and they add up.
Well, you know, we talked about this right at the beginning, this whole concept of return on investment. From the business perspective, if you're not monitoring what's happening and keeping your clients happy, that is a return on investment. It's a negative return now because you're losing clients.
Well, and what's the value of you seeing a situation where somebody's mildly dissatisfied with something and catching it and fixing it? Instead of it escalating and them going through a million customer service 1-800 numbers and phone trees to get to it, what's the value of retaining customers and, more importantly sometimes, the public and other people seeing that you're helping that customer? There's an exponential value to that that rarely gets discussed. And that, to me, is huge, where people, when they have a complaint, they just want to be validated for the most part. They want to be said they're heard. It's human nature. There's a huge value in people seeing that a company cares about something.
Are you finding that more and more companies are getting it, or are they still behind the big fence walls thinking that they are still all-knowing and all-omnipotent, that they're shielded to all this?
Yeah, they're somewhat. I think they're getting better. The problem is some of them are being pulled kicking and screaming into social media. And they're, like, they're crying like they're 2 years old, and we don't want to engage, and we don't want to be here, and I truly believe that a lot of companies really don't care what the customer thinks, and they don't want to hear what the customer says. They want them to buy the damn product. And so for them, forcing social media and forcing engagement is like forcing your team to go to a motivational seminar with a terrible speaker. It doesn't work. It won't do anything. It's just lip service. But I do think there's some companies, especially smaller ones, that have a chance where they might not have been able to compete. They wouldn't have the marketing dollars, the advertising dollars before. They have the ability to react and to turn their ship really quickly because they don't have to go through 10 layers. So it's the smaller people and the smaller companies that I think are benefiting the most from social media. And the big companies will always still know best, especially when they're run by marketing. You know, one of the qualifications for us to be in marketing is to have an ego. So you never want to be told wrong. And you're the one that makes the call for that. So I think we realizing that not only is it an issue with bigger companies, we also have to realize that sometimes social media isn't something that's under marketing. It's also under customer service. It's also under human resources. It's company-wide. It's not just one silo at your company either.
I find some of them just still don't get it. There is a company, I'm always looking for interesting topics that I can share with my listeners and viewers. And, you know, by no means is my little puppet show like your big juggernaut in terms of following, but my content gets syndicated. So I reached out to this one company, and they're making these funky shoes, you know, with toes on them. And it's this whole movement now about getting back to running naturally, the way we're meant to. And to me, running naturally means I'm being chased by something with big pointy teeth or a stick. That's natural. Otherwise, I'd take a car. But the point is, I called the company and said, hey, here's who I am. You can check out, you know, here are the links so you can see that I'm legit. I'm not just trick-or-treating, hoping you'll fill my bag with goodies. I'd really love to do a product review. Can you send me a few samples? And I will do a video and audio and introduce this to my people because I think it looks pretty cool. 3 phone calls I had to make before somebody finally returned a call. And when I got them on the call, they were borderline belligerent, if you will.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, so I had to step back because I'm usually 2 sentences ahead of my brain at any given time. So that's my curse. Mm-hmm. I'll put it out there. Then I realize, well, you know, maybe that wasn't the best thing to say. And so I put the big balls on, and I said, look, I've got a following here of about 200,000 people. And when I syndicate this, it will go out to over a million. Now, do you want a million people to see me do a review of your product? Because I'm going to take a basically a Kleenex box, I'm going to cut holes in it, and I'm going to use little toilet paper rolls on my toes. This is going to be the product evaluation. Or would you like to have me as an advocate and get behind you? And still didn't get it.
Wow.
Still did not get it.
Wow. That's amazing. And that's where it really has changed, though, like even to the point where some conferences now or events where they kind of grant press credentials. And I have some friends of mine who all they do is blog. That's their job. Their blog, they have more readers than some, you know, printed papers and periodicals out there. And they go and ask for press credentials because they want to cover the event and put it in their blog. And they get turned down because they read a blog. Or they get turned down because, you know, they're not in a classical sense of the word. I'm like, you know, these people have bigger audiences than most of these newspapers you're talking about. And I understand why they don't, you know, want to always do it, because anybody can put up a blog, but it's a new media. It's a new way of doing things. And we have to realize that word can spread, and it's a very small world. And a company that ticks you off with new shoes with toes in them could have been a brand evangelist, and now they have somebody who just shakes their head at them. It doesn't make sense for them.
Yeah, I'm swinging my fist in the air like Craig Ferguson does on The Late Late Show, just screaming with my sidekick here.
Exactly.
The one thing that's getting back to the scary side of what's happening, and I think agents really have to be cognizant of this, that there are sites springing up all over the place that are going to be reviewing them and rating them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something completely new and really foreign to realtors, that they don't have the control anymore to say that my service is great and I'm wonderful. The consumers are going to be saying, well, you know what? You're not that great and you're not that wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Have you come across that at all? And how does that tie in with what we're talking about with social media?
Well, you get, again, it's everything is in public. So it's a great, great day and time and age for companies that provide good service and have a good product. But it's terrible for people. Social media doesn't make your product better. Like, if your product sucks, it just sucks harder in social media. Like, there is no way around it. Nothing, social media doesn't solve things. It doesn't make things better or different than what they are. It makes it louder. So if you don't have confidence, if you're cutting corners, people are going to say it. People are going to go out there and know. Like, if you look at a site like theconsumerist.com, they have more readers than almost every single newspaper in North America that read this thing every day. And it's all people talking about their... tell people talking about their experience, and usually their bad experience with companies. You've got to be, you know, unethical or slack companies, look out, because the power is back with the people, and they're shouting really, really loud. And I remember, you know, viral videos of what we've been doing for so long that for 7-8 years, the number one, there's two of the biggest groups of people you never want to piss off because they spread the word so quickly. It's moms and it's religious people. And religious moms, look out, you know, they'll spread like wildfire. And so you realize, you evoke emotion, that's what happens. And usually the emotion that gets evoked in social media is anger at something, at a company. Like you said, with the American Airlines one, or the United Airlines, the brace guitars. And there's, you know, 100 examples of things like that, where that just spreads around and people rally because everybody gets empathy, because they've all been screwed over by an airline. They've all been screwed over by somebody doing something else, or this product or that one. And they want to help. They want to feel like they belong, and they want to feel like they matter and make a difference. And that's how we do it in social media.
Do you think that there's something, and this sounds kind of hokey, you know, in the times that we live right now, the times they are changing, I feel like putting on my Bob Dylan hat and start playing guitar. I sent out an email to my followers last week, and I was under the gun because usually I do a video every week, and I was just spent. I had family over, the whole nine yards. Not making excuses, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And it was kind of synchronicity that a friend of mine sent me this email, and it was a story about this little old lady that had packed up her bag, and she's leaving her home for the last time, and she's going to a hospice. And she calls a taxi, and the premise is the taxi wants to get her there in the quickest route possible, and she says, no, can you take me through downtown? Because she wants to reminisce and see all these things for the last time.
Right.
And it was a very impactful, emotional short story. And I sent it out to my followers. I have never received such an outpouring of emails on anything that I've done. And the one that really stood out was somebody that was thanking me for sharing this, because number one, they said, it speaks to the character of your friend who shared this with you in the first place. And it says a lot about you for sharing it with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really moved by I wasn't even thinking of what kind of impact that this would have.
But then, see, now this plays back to the topic where you said to me earlier about, you know, why would I care or want to read about somebody who they had more brand in their cereal on Twitter or something? That poem, that story had nothing to do with real estate. It had nothing to do with making money or investing or anything else. That's personal. And that makes people realize you're human. And that's why social media works, whether it's your email or list or a blog or Twitter or Facebook, that we realize, you know what, we are human. All of us are human. And it's those touching things, too, that can make you realize, you know, it's not always about a dollar, even though we got to make a dollar. And there's, like, I did a tweet-a-thon a couple weeks ago. I ran a tweet-a-thon on Twitter in 30 hours. We tweeted to raise money for a boy, Tanner, who lives in B.C., to raise money to renovate his house so it was more accommodating for him. And we raised, the goal was $25,000, and we raised $29,000 straight through Twitter over a 30-hour period for this one boy out west in B.C. People are awesome. And social media reminds me of that. I hate people for the most part. I get very jaded. That's part of my brand because it's part of my personality. Is I kind of get fed up with a lot of the things out there and people. But something like that and raising money for Tanner and seeing that is, I remember that people are actually awesome. So when you send out a short story like that, people sit back and go, you know what? That's very cool. I don't want to know the ROI of that. I just think it's awesome. And that pays itself back exponentially in just a bond of our relationship. And the next time you send an email to that person from that list, they're going to look at it a little bit quicker because they have a better relationship with you.
You know, I'm biting my lip right now and the blood's trickling down my chin. You say you hate people, but hey, buy my book.
Well, I actually, Unmarketing was created out of spite. I created the entire company because I was fed up with people doing hypocritical marketing where they hated getting cold calls, but they would say, how can we do better cold calls for my own business? And that's what I hate. I hate people who use people, who think of people just as a number or as a monetary amount. So yeah, I do. I hate a whole bunch of people out there. And people who get it, people who understand community and relationships, I adore. And so when I get to see people live at an event, that's why I get to hug them. That's why I get to embrace them, because we connect so well that the people who understand community and friends, and this is actually a side thing to Twitter and how it works, is if I know somebody and I've gotten to know them and they ask me for a favor, I get DMs every day, direct messages, the private messages on Twitter, because of the size of my following I have, to say, hey, can you send this out to promote this? If I don't know you, I'm not doing it. It doesn't make any sense. If I know you, I'll go to the wall for you. I'll do anything to help people. And that means that's thousands upon thousands of people, not just my seven friends I've had for 15 years around here, my circle of friends. My circle of friends are thousands, and that's not even an exaggeration. And when I have that tweet-a-thon or when I see anything of those things that happen, I realize, you know, the ones who are good people, I love them. And everybody else, they can go somewhere else.
I hear all these religious moms now starting to lock and load, buddy. They're coming your way. Lock and load. You've got this thing happening online, and it's called your Unmarketing Bootcamp, Uncamp.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Tell me a little bit about this.
Oh, the Unbootcamp. Yeah, it's a five-week kind of automated. It'll come to you every week. And it's you know, kind of video modules of different things from biomarketing to social media. There's one, week two is called the seven deadly website sins, and there's seven videos of me going through each sin, so I've kind of made up a fun video for each one. So, you know, for gluttony, I'm eating a Lick's cheeseburger, you know, sped up five times speed at the start, and you know, you can't shame the shameless, so I make myself look ridiculous, but it brings home the point of everything you do, you know, comes under, do you want to build relationships with your audience, or are you just trying to pitch them right away? And, you know, there's tools for both, and I just try to look at the relationship side of things.
So would this be a good place to start if I'm trying to find out what to do next?
Yeah, it's pretty basic. It's a nice low barrier to entry and low price point for it, so it's a good start to come to the Unbootcamp, and it's really, I deliver it over 5 weeks, so you get time to work on each one, where I found that being in the information and internet marketing world, we buy these big information packs, and then we get through the first section with momentum, and then we forget about them. And I really want to make I want people not just to buy it, but to actually go through it.
Oh, it's funny. You probably know what we probably run in the same circles once upon a time. Dan Kennedy, you know, one of the consummate marketers. And I remember I was at one of his things, and he was telling a story about, you know, internet marketers like to sell a box of stuff.
Yeah.
And they purposely make it so big that you won't return it because you can't afford the shipping and handling to get it back.
Right.
And the story was from his fulfillment guy called him up and said, did you notice any difference in your rate of returns? And Dan says, no. Well, why do you ask? He said, well, we had a screw up when we were mass producing the DVDs, and number one is blank. So the first friggin' thing in the series is blank and nobody's noticed because it probably sits there like it's a new coffee table, you know?
But that's what it is. And that's why I wanted to get out of internet marketing. It's so much like it's fake subject lines. And I've seen internet marketing guys put in re, as in like a reply, re with the colon and then a subject to make it think like they're replying directly to you when it's just a pitch for something. And it's killing me. I'm dying inside to see these things. And it's not about trying to trick somebody to buy. I really don't think so. I think there's a place in the world for people like us who believe that, you know what, people care, people talk, and people, the good guy can finish first or in the top three.
I see it. You know, it's a level playing field, and I know that expression's been used time and time again, but literally it is, because if you have, we'll call them friends, your followers that are tuned into what you're saying, you've got access to all the toys. And one thing I didn't touch on, and you just actually kind of brought it up here, with videos. What's the response been like to the videos that you do? Because they're like mine. You're basically a knucklehead having fun.
The response has been great. Because it works with my brand, and I think that you and I could do video. A lot of people can do video, but more people can't. I really think there's certain things about video that can't be taught. And that's why I don't have a course on how to be great at video. Because if somebody's awkward in front of video, it's really hard to change that fact. And if it works for you, I really think I want people to be great at their medium they're good at. So if you're a good writer, be good at writing. If you're good at video, be good at video. And the response to my videos has been great. But I've also found that I get better response when I write a blog post. Excuse me. When I write a blog post rather than do a video for one. It's something about the written word. I didn't know that when I started blogging a year ago. I thought of it all video-based because that's what I do. You know, I love being in front of the camera. And the text is you know, gets a lot, sometimes more response. And I realize it because also people read, a lot of my audience reads the post on their mobile, on their BlackBerry, their iPhone, and the video doesn't transfer through very well sometimes.
Interesting. Have you thought about changing the codec of your video to make it mobile friendly?
Yeah, and I'm embedding it with a couple, like both Vimeo and YouTube are now, you know, mobile friendly and iPad friendly now too. But I also found that people just like to consume text and they can read it at their own pace. And video, again, the video very effective. I like to use it in a lot of different mediums. But I found, like with the blog, people can consume text much quicker and they get very impatient very quickly. And video, you have to watch it at the pace the video is made. Now remember, I'm marketing, we live in video, and that's what we do. So I'm certainly a proponent of everything about video, but my blog, I find much deeper and stronger and more, you know, plentiful responses when I go text.
Speaking of this deeper and stronger, Scott, as we're wrapping this up right now, if I were to ask you to leave me one heart. Oh, actually, let me rewind this. Let's do it this way. If I were to stick you on a desert island somewhere, and I'm going to say pen and paper, but you don't do that. So you'll be sitting there with your little, you know, whatever app phone.
Yeah.
What would be, and it's not limited to 240 characters, what would be that one impactful message that you'd want to leave with the listeners?
Well, you know, it comes down back to my kind of cheesy phrase, but it really works for me that if you believe that business is built on relationships, make building them your business. And to get even more cheesy on you, that people will take shots at you. People will try to tell you that you're wrong or you're not good at what you do. And it happens. Everything's like high school, but we get paid now. That it's okay to take a stand. It's okay to believe in something. And when you do take a stand, people will stand behind you and they'll follow you and they'll stand up for you. There are some awesome people out there. Sometimes it's just harder to find them, you know, these days.
Scott, I want to thank you for taking time out today to do this. It's gone by so quickly. here. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go?
Just come on by to say hi to me on Twitter at unmarketing, or come to unmarketing.com, and we're out there. And or come to one of the cities. Go to unmarketing.com and go to the link to unbook tour dates, and 30 cities all around North America. So if you're around, come on out.
Can they buy books directly through you, through your website?
You can go to the website. There's links to everywhere from Amazon to Indigo to Barnes & Noble, wherever you want to buy them. They're all, and they're on the bookstore shelf. So.
Great. Scott, I want to thank you for taking time out today, my friend, and ice those thumbs of yours, and continued success.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, hold up a second.